Good morning. This is Narkee Street Congregation's Shabbat Morning Bible Study, March 12th, 2016. I'm Gary Alley, and we will be looking at the beginning of Genesis 25 and the Haftarah of 2 Samuel 5, verse 13, to the end of that chapter, first verse of chapter 6. We should have ourselves an interesting study this morning.
Yes, amazing.
Open in prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us here. Thank you for your word that is a rock. Your words are true, and none of them ever fall to the ground. Help us to understand what you've given to us through all of these many years. And may the examples of those who've gone before us guide us in your ways. And may we follow you even today and tomorrow. Give us your spirit to guide us as well. And fill us during this time that you may light a fire in us.
Amen.
So let's read Genesis chapter 25, verses 1 to 18. Maybe we'll have two readers. One person can read the Genesis 25 part, and the other reader can read from the 2 Samuel part. Actually, we got a third part we're going to read as well. So, I'll ask Jimma maybe to do the first one here, Genesis 25.
Right. Abraham had taken another wife whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan was the father of Sheba and Dedan. The descendants of Dedan were the Asherites, the Letushites, and the Leomites. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Ephah, Hanok, Abida, and Eldar. All these were descendants of Keturah. Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. Abraham lived 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. His sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre, in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite, the field Abraham had bought from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Be'el Lahai Roy. This is the account of the family line of Abraham's son Ishmael, whom Sarah's slave, Hagar the Egyptian, bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, listed in the order of their birth: Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, Kedar, Adbeel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadad, Tamar, Jetur, Naphish, and Kedima. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these are the names of the 12 tribal rulers according to their settlements and camps. Ishmael lived 137 years. He breathed his last and died, and he was gathered to his people. His descendants settled in the area from Havilah to Shur, near the eastern border of Egypt as you go towards Ashur, and they lived in hostility towards all the tribes related to them.
Amen.
Amen.
So, this is probably part of the Bible that a lot of people skip over. So this morning, let's see some things that might stick out to us as being peculiar in the text or interesting. Any observations?
Verse 1, or just wherever we've got interest.
Genesis 25, verse 1 to verse 18.
Okay.
Well, I like, while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines. He has all these children that we really know nothing about.
And I have to admit, I did not realize that Abraham had concubines. I knew about Hagar and Keturah, but I was shocked, actually, that he had concubines.
He was a big warlord.
Yeah, he was a warlord. But I think the reason why I was shocked is it's only one sentence in the entire thing about concubines. And so you don't really remember that because it's just, oh, by the way, he had concubines and he gave gifts to them.
He had 300 lieutenants or men of arms.
Right.
The rest of the law. That's a lot of.
No, I'm not trying to say.
But you could get those also as.
Without concubines, that's true. You could.
But the other question is, in this whole question about heir, why, obviously we have Ishmael as a contendant, you know, for the heir. But what about all these other concubine sons? Wouldn't they have precedence over, like, Eliezer.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah, so how come they were never part of the picture of...
Or did these concubines come after Sarah died?
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Well, look at this. It says, Vayishalchem al Yitzhak b'no.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent them away from Isaac. The idea is, like, he doesn't want them to inherit...
But notice
he wants to safeguard Isaac.
But chronologically, this is after he sends away Ishmael. So,
right.
Like he could have sent them all away at the same time, but
yeah, unless this is chronologically in a different place,
or this is the right place.
Okay, so if it's the right place,
right.
Abraham was 137 when he took Keturah as a wife
and concubines
and all these concubines.
Right.
So
Sarah had a strong hand.
Yeah,
so
but
she had to be out of the picture.
Wait. Yeah, 137.
But wait a minute. He takes Keturah.
Yeah.
And she bears a whole bunch of children.
Yeah.
So that's over a period of time.
That's right.
So, I mean...
So if he married her at 137, he's pretty young.
Who's pretty young?
Abraham.
The word here is he took... A wife, not a concubine.
Okay, so wait. Very good point, Randy.
25:1 is he's got a wife.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that's
good. Go ahead.
And then we have a whole bunch of concubines later on in verse 5.
The movements here are interesting. You already mentioned that he sent away the children of his concubines. As a way, apparently, of protecting Isaac. But if you remember, Isaac himself had run away with Sarah's tent, and he was living off on his own someplace.
It doesn't say he ran away with Sarah's tent.
I guess.
What?
It doesn't say he ran away with Sarah's tent.
It says he had Sarah's tent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's Sarah's tent? He wasn't necessarily next to his father.
But what I wanted to point out was the movements that are going on here. There's a lot of movement away, especially after the death. So Sarah dies, Isaac moves away.
Depending where Sarah was and where Isaac is.
It's not clear. And with Abraham's death, what is interesting is that Ishmael shows up again in the narrative. So wherever Ishmael had been, he hadn't been that far away because burial customs are quick, especially in the Middle East, tropical latitudes. With Abraham's death, both Isaac and Ishmael are there to bury him, so they're within a few hours walk of wherever they were living. So yeah, they could have been, Ishmael could have been down at Arad
Well, it says at the end where he was.
So what's your point though?
My point is that all of these people are still living in the same general area even when they go away.
Right.
And the one that goes away the farthest at the end is Ishmael, who goes all the way down to the Egyptian border, which is quite far away. And
okay, well, let's talk about where they all go.
Now, what is also important because of this modern rewriting of history that goes on, people come along and try to rewrite history, we're still 1,000 kilometers away from the Arab narrative that Ishmael was down at
Mecca.
Mecca.
Okay, so we won't go into that right now.
Together.
Yeah. But I do want to point out, Nadim has pointed out that she's a wife. She's not a Pilate. What?
Keturah
is a wife. She's not a pilegesh or concubine. The word in Hebrew is pilegesh. But what's interesting, go to 1 Chronicles 1:32. 1 Chronicles 1:32. Because my question is, what do we know about Keturah from the Bible? From Genesis.
Wasn't she Egyptian?
No, that was Ishmael's wife.
Wait, 1 Chronicles?
Hagar was Egyptian, and then he marries an Egyptian. Ishmael marries an Egyptian. That's in Genesis. Yeah. 1 Chronicles 1:32. From the biblical text, we know nothing about Keturah, from what I could find. She appears out of nowhere. It doesn't say, like, Hagar, we know she comes from Egypt. Sarah, we know she comes from Mesopotamia with Abraham. But Keturah, we know nothing. And we do know her sons go east. So maybe that's a hint to where she's from. But it's interesting here in 1 Chronicles, and when we read from Chronicles, we have to read with a bit of fear and trepidation, because Chronicles has a certain view of history from the view of Jerusalem and Judah. But notice what Chronicles calls Keturah here.
Abraham's concubine.
Concubine, Pilegesh. So this is the only, not in Genesis, but here in Chronicles, she's called a concubine. And maybe that's because trying to emphasize that her descendants aren't as legitimate as Sarah's, which would be Isaac and the Jewish people. So it's something interesting to look at there. So Keturah, we know nothing about her ethnicity, but let's look at her sons. Her sons are Zimran and Yokshan.
Are they the same? Most of them, aren't they?
Yokshan, Medan. You mean in Chronicles?
Chronicles and...
Yeah, they're the same in Chronicles. But I'm back in Genesis 25, right. Verse 2. Yokshan, Medan, and Midian, Yishbak,
Yeshua.
How many sons?
12, I thought.
Six for Keturah. And is there anything is there anything fishy about these names?
Midian?
We've got another alarm going off here.
Midian?
Sorry, Midian? Yeah. Midian. Okay, so go ahead.
So Midian is supposed to come from Lot.
Okay, and down in history, what's even more important?
Midianites.
The Midianites, who are?
The enemies of Gideon, that's what I remember.
Okay,
they're the enemies of Israel in general.
But before... Oh, they're the traitors that are involved with Joseph. But also, I'm thinking specifically, Moses' father-in-law is Jethro.
Jethro is a Midianite.
And he's a Midianite. But before we even go there, according to Genesis chapter 10, you know the table of nations? Go to Genesis chapter 10, verse 7. Remember,
that's confusing for a second, the Midianites and the Moabites. But that gets confused.
That's an Ammonites. That's Ammonites.
Right. Moab and Ammon come from Lot. Midian doesn't. They're connected in the story of Bilam.
Yeah. Genesis 10, verse 7. What does it say there?
Sons of Cush were Seba and Havilah and Sabta and Raamah and Sabta.
the sense of Ammon, Sheba, and Dedan.
Okay, so I got my two mixed up there. I'm looking at the two names, Shva and Dedan. Those are the descendants, those are the grandkids of Keturah. Back in Genesis 25, verse 3, if you're able to look back and forth there, they're the same two names. So according to Genesis 25, verse 3, they come from Abraham. And we all know Abraham comes back to of the three. Sorry?
Sons of Ham is Dedan. Sons of Keturah is Medan.
No, it's Dedan. It's Dedan.
Medan.
Yeah, it's not. That's not what. It's not the Hebrew Bible.
Midian.
No, sorry. Verse 3.
This is the grandson.
Genesis.
The grandson.
25.
The grandson. Yoksha was the father of
Sheba.
Verse 3. Yeah.
Shva and Dedan.
Yeah, his
father is Yokshan, one of those six.
Yokshan is the son, right?
Of Keturah.
And then who are the two sons of Yokshan?
Shva and Dedan.
Yeah,
Dedan.
So that's the same two names in Genesis 10.
Yeah, we're talking about the grandsons.
Yeah, the grandsons.
Where are we going with this? I mean, it's quite fun to play games with the genealogists, but I get lost in my own family, let alone anybody else's. I'm interested to know
Genesis
who
10.
These Asherites are.
Genesis.
The strange people that we've never really heard of.
Well, hold on, we'll get there.
And the Laomites.
Genesis 10 says that Shva and Dedan come from Ham. Right? Ham is who? He's the son
father
of Noah.
Of Cush.
He's the father of Cush. Cush is.
Basically, Egypt,
it's like
Africa,
Ethiopia, that area.
Sudan.
Later on, who comes from the country of Shva to visit Solomon?
Sheba.
Malkat Shva.
Yeah, Malkat Shva. It's the same name, Shva. Sheba, you know,
Shva.
Where we,
right.
We, the Queen of Sheba. That's
yeah.
The name right here
Sheba,
in Genesis 25. So, here in Genesis 25, it seems like Shva is coming from Abram, which is one line of Noah. But in Genesis 10, Shva is coming from Ham, who is another line of Noah. So it's just one of these things where you look at the Bible and it's got mysteries or it's not always so clear is what I'm trying to get at.
Have the same name but the different lines too.
Maybe. Right. But we also have to remember that the Bible, when it does chronologies, doesn't always do it literally this generation. It'll skip generations when it's stringing them out. So a son of someone, according to the way we would read it, they might be a grandson or a great-grandson. There's many examples in the Bible of that. But anyways, so this is just an interesting thing. So the question is, when we're reading this genealogy of Keturah, it mentions six sons, but then it'll point out, like what Gemma just said, who are these Asherites, these Letushites, and these
Leumites.
Leumim.
They're bankers.
And Dedan is... that's also connected. They are connected down to trading. Just to give you some examples, if you go to Ezekiel, chapter 27, Dedan and Shva go hand in hand.
Ezekiel
often.
What?
Ezekiel 27. Verse 15. The Dedanites were your clients. Many coastlands were your customers. They paid you with ivory tusks and ebony. And there, Ezekiel's talking about...
guess what my Bible did.
What did they say?
Rodanim instead of Dedanim.
Okay, so
because
they...
I've got roads, and they're not roads.
So
they changed the Dalet to Oresh.
Because...
of the Greek islands.
Because the Septuagint, yeah.
Right, okay.
So we're really saying that it should be Dedan.
That's what the Hebrew has, Dedan.
We may have it in that.
Yeah, okay. Verse, go down to verse 20. Dedan was your client in saddle cloths for riding. If you go to Ezekiel 38, verse 13. Ezekiel 38, verse 13. Shva and Dedan and the traders of Tarshish with all its young warriors will say to you, have you come to loot? Have you assembled your armies to plunder, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to haul away a great amount of spoils? And if you were to look at Jeremiah chapter 25, verse 23, it says the people of Dedan, Tema. Tema is where kind of what today where you have the Yemen. And so you can think about down there on the bottom of the Arabian Peninsula. The people of Dedan, Tema, Buz.
Sorry, where are you reading again?
Jeremiah 25, verse 23. Are you there? Mm-hmm. All the desert people who cut their hair short at the temples.
Because they took Nazarite vows, is that why they cut their hair short?
I don't know. It's a good question, but
Gary tries to avoid that.
Right. Yeah, try not to do too many vows.
So, sorry, are you saying that some of these people's maybe types of particular professions rather than
I'm trying to give a context of the Dedan and their people, mm-hmm. and they're sent to the east, remember, by Abraham because of Isaac. And so you see that they're associated with the desert, with trading.
I was going to say, to her comment, for sure, and when you look at Cain's genealogy, he has Tuval, Cain, all these, well, all people who play the oboe or whatever kind of instruments you want to call it. So, you know, there are people who still play the oboe. You know, does that really mean all people ever who play right. the oboe were descendants of Cain? Or is there, it's kind of like a generalization.
But it is saying something. I mean, I was thinking of, I'm a bit lost, I have to confess, but in Jeremiah, in the Jeremiah one, I think.
25, verse 23.
Is that the one I'm looking at? I think in the Jeremiah, it's very clear that Dedan and Shiva again, yeah. they're part. So we're talking about southern African whatever.
Or the Northern African.
Northern Africa, Southern Israel.
Given that I start in Jerusalem, I'm talking about Southern.
Yeah.
And they're going south. I mean, sometimes they get to Egypt, sometimes they go further down.
Right. And they're traders. Also, if you're writing down notes, Isaiah 21, verse 13. You don't have to look at it now, but they've got caravans and...
there you go. What did your translation say for cutting...
Cutting hair?
Yeah.
That's what it said.
Cut the corners of their hair?
No, just cut, shave their heads or something. Where is that? That's Jeremiah 25, verse 23.
23. It's weird, you know, my Bible says in English, and all who are in distant places.
Yeah.
And mine says farthest corners.
But you've got the kings of Tyre and Sidon, which
and
are
then
north.
As a footnote, or who clip the hair by their foreheads.
Okay, so now we're going to have some fun.
Okay.
We're going to read 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 13.
2 Samuel.
So just to summarize what we just read in Genesis 25, Abram marries Keturah. She's a wife according to Genesis, but according to Chronicles, she's a concubine. She has six sons. Abraham sends them east because of Isaac. He dies. Ishmael comes back, and Isaac and Ishmael bury Abraham in where?
Machpelah,
which is in
Hebron.
And then it talks about Ishmael's sons. How many does he have? 12. And people like to point out, you know, the 12 sons of Jacob and the 12 sons of Ishmael. And And now
it ties up with the prophecy to Hagar, which you will have they will be sons, they will be tribes,
right? Yeah.
In the desert and whatever. But they're also, it's the same
and
thing
who,
in the end.
Who is the last son of Ishmael? What's his name?
No idea.
It's Kedma. Uh-huh. And where did Abraham send the six sons of Keturah?
Kedma.
To the east.
Which is translated to the east. And
also, you were mentioning.
Where were you, Lee, yesterday?
We were at Kedma. There's a winery called Kedma. Yeah. But
isn't the same? I mean, there's also, can't you play with that word?
Oh sure.
Sure.
It's not always easy because it's Kedma and.
Because Kedma also kind of it means ancient times or like the old ways.
Kedumim. It's the same thing.
But here's the principle. You look at the past. Everything you've done in your life, you can see, right? The future, you can't see.
Right.
So in the Bible, your face is facing east, and it's also facing past time. The future is behind you because you can't see it. So it's like you're walking that way.
The only way you can walk is backwards.
Walking backwards is Christmas.
Yeah.
Then the place, Neot Kedumim, has that both thing. It's a beautiful place of the past, but it's also to do with.
Yeah, so past and east, you can see a little bit how
always,
it could be connected.
You're always oriented towards the Orient.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So you guys, Yom Achalim, behind you then, right? Like this future is behind us, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Achalit Hayamim is a future, right? That's behind you.
That's behind you.
Yeah, because you can't see the future. You can see everything that's happened.
So we're setting the stage of Kedma, right? Ishmael, his last son, everybody's going east. And now we come to David, 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 13. I'm going to read it. David married more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he arrived from Hebron. Even more sons and daughters were born to David. These are the names of the children born to him in Jerusalem: Shamua, Shovav, Nathan, Shlomo, Ibhar, Elishua, Nefeg, Yafia, Elishama, Eliade, Eliphelet. When the Philistines heard that David had been designated king over Israel, they all went up to search for David. When David heard about it, he went down to the fortress. Now the Philistines had arrived and spread out in the valley of Rephaim, or today we call it Emek Rephaim. It's a very nice street to shop on. So David asked the Lord, "Should I march up against the Philistines? Will you hand them over to me?" The Lord said to David, "March up, for I will indeed hand the Philistines over to you." So David marched against Baal Perazim and defeated them there. Then he said, "The Lord has burst out against my enemies like water burst out." So he called the name of that place Baal Perazim. The Philistines abandoned their idols there, and David and his men picked them up. The Philistines again came up and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. So David asked the Lord what he should do. This time the Lord said to him, "Don't march straight up. Instead, circle around behind them and come against them opposite the trees. When you hear the sound of the marching in the tops of the trees, act decisively. For at that moment, the Lord is going before you to strike down the army of the Philistines." David did just as the Lord commanded him, and he struck down the Philistines from Gibeon. Actually, in the Hebrew it says Geba, all the way to Gezer. And the reason why I guess the NET Bible has Gibeon here is because of the Septuagint. So those are two different places. Geba is kind of like where Pisgat Ze'ev is, and Gibeon is, it's further out. But this is all Benjamite territory, right? Randy? Oh, yeah. So we'll talk about this.
If you run up the ridge route and down,
right,
that makes sense.
Okay, so what pops out here with our two passages?
They both took more wives.
Okay. And specifically in David's case,
Pilagshim Venashim.
Yeah, he took concubines first and women, and they were specific wives. They were specifically from where?
Yerushalayim.
Interesting. And where did David come from?
He came up from Hebron.
From Hebron. And So, if you think back to Genesis 25, when Abraham took Keturah, where did he come from?
Where did he come from?
Yeah, where did Abraham come from?
From the binding of Isaac, you're saying?
Mm-mm.
Hebron, when he buried Sarah in Hebron.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, and if we go back to Genesis, let's see, 23, Sarah lived and then Sarah died, Genesis 23. And then he had to go by the tomb and bury her there. And then what's the very next chapter in Genesis, Genesis 24, what's that about? We did last week?
Isaac and Rebekah.
Isaac and Rebekah, which doesn't involve Abraham at all. He just sent off Eliezer out to that distant country. So if you follow the biblical text, obviously time's passed, and we don't really know where Abraham was. But if you follow the text, he's coming now from Hebron, based off of his last involvement in the text. And this is when he takes Keturah. So who knows? Maybe Keturah is a Jebusite. Maybe she's from Shalem, or, you know, right here, if you wanted to look at the parallel of the Haftarah. We have no idea where Keturah is from, but that would just be a fun way to look at the connection there.
And interesting, like, David is trying to solidify his power, right? Because he's been ruling out of Hebron, and now he captures Jerusalem, and he wants to make that his new capital.
Right.
So it's like, you take a bunch of concubines
from that,
have children, city, and that somehow is supposed to
make you part of that.
Make you a legitimate ruler.
You've married in.
Yeah, now you have some local people,
right,
that are yours.
So how many children does David have here from Jerusalem, according to what we just read?
Four.
Mm.
Or more.
Yeah.
11. So
they're listed separately. I don't know if there's...
But it's still 11 if you add them up. So, and of course, the big one that we all know is Solomon.
It's interesting that he comes in here as number four.
Who else was number four in the list?
You mean in another list?
In a famous list.
Joseph?
Joseph is like, what, 11 or something?
Judah,
right? Judah's fourth.
Oh, very good.
Wait, where did you get 11?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, count them.
I have 11.
Shamu is 1, Shobab is 2, Nathan is 3, Solomon is 4, Ibar is 5, Elishua is 6.
Ah, Yivchar is the name?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a funny name, huh?
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just looking at his word. Okay, you're right, okay.
So Solomon, who was, I thought, was born second.
No.
Well, he loses the first child. But he has
second to that wife, though. You see, David's got all kinds of wives going on.
So this is another Solomon. It's not the same
one. No, this is the Solomon. I mean, this is not chronological, like Solomon was born right then and then later on. This is, I think, all of his sons that were born from the Jerusalem women group, I think is what the writing is.
He's on, I see. So we're saying that he...
These are his sons from Jerusalem.
He's sitting on the roof looking at Beersheba, and they've all gone off to war. So what I was saying is, he's already had...
Yeah, no.
He already has sons.
Remember, his first wife is
Micha.
It's Milcha, isn't it?
No, Michal.
Michal.
So there's Ma'acha, Saul's oldest daughter?
No. The first wife. One who did this thing.
Michal is the one.
Michal.
And she didn't have children, or she already had children.
Yeah.
She's a child. She never had children after that point.
Yeah, but she might have had it before.
She did, because it's listed.
Yeah.
She had children.
Yeah, for sure.
She doesn't get children after she laughs at him dancing around
right.
naked. Right.
So he's got previous wives, right?
And children.
And previous children, but he comes to Jerusalem, and it's just mentioning in the text that he has children from this city, specifically you know, for whatever reason, probably.
But all I said is Solomon's number four, and I was didn't understand that whole process.
Right.
But then you're linking it now with Judah, who is also number four.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it is interesting because, like, David was number eight, right? He was the last one, right. And God chose him. Right. So number eight, you could say, is important. Number four isn't, but it's all just how you want to weave things. And
what stands out to me is Machpelah, because I've been tracking Ron Wyatt's discoveries for many years. I don't know where you're at on that.
Who's?
Ron Wyatt.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But when you look on arkdiscovery.com right now, he gives a very good description and pictures of property in Hebron that are a graveyard where the possibility of these, where they were buried. And with a distinct possibility that when Jesus arose and people arose with him, they were part of the saints that came with him. So that's really in the forefront of my thinking right now. So if you want to track that, it's at arkdiscovery.com.
Okay. Thanks. So going back to this text, we have a list of children, just like we had in Genesis. We had the list of Keturah, we had the list of Ishmael, and now we have a list of David, and it's specifically tied into Jerusalem. And then we have the Philistines attack. And so this is down in the very expensive area now of Jerusalem, where the Philistines spread out, and David beats them twice, right? The first time he meets them. The second time he kind of goes around them and meets them according to the advice or the direction given by God. And now I would like to read
the can I just say something?
Yeah.
The lovely bit that I love about the story is the first time David says, "Shall I go and attack the Philistines? Will you deliver them?" And the Lord says, "Go, I'll surely deliver the Philistines into your hand." Now, if we had an experience like that, and we went and did it, sure as eggs, when the second time came round, we'd go and basically do the same thing. And what happens here is he actually has the wisdom to ask the Lord what to do, and the Lord gives him completely different instructions. I mean, this crazy thing about waiting for the rushing in the trees or whatever, and you can imagine, I always think of him going to his chief of staff and saying, "Well, actually, it sounds a bit different. We've got to wait for this rushing of the trees." Here it says poplars, but I think familiarly we always got told the mulberry bushes or something.
Whatever they are.
Well, it doesn't really matter. It's just the idea that it's a totally different marching orders and strategies, and David had the wisdom to listen. I just put that in because I think it always strikes me that I'm...
So, here's how I want to end this morning. The fun part is I want to read the parallel story of what we just read about David and his children in Jerusalem and the Philistines. And that parallel is in 1 Chronicles chapter 14, starting in verse 2. And
is that him?
1 Chronicles chapter 14, verse 2 to 16. And if someone down there would like to read that out loud, be great. You can start whenever you want.
1 Chronicles 14, 2 to 16?
Yes.
So David knew that the Lord had established him as king over Israel, for his kingdom was highly exalted for the sake of his people Israel. Then David took two more wives in Jerusalem, and David begot
two more wives?
Two more wives.
Like the number...
Two more wives.
Sorry. Okay.
But then David took more wives in Jerusalem, and David begot more sons and daughters. And these are the names of his children whom he had in Jerusalem: Shamua, Shobab, Natan, Shlomo, Yibchar, and Yeshua, and Pelet, and Noga, Nepe, Yafia, and Yishama, and Eliphelet. Now the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over all Israel, and all the Philistines went up to search for David. And David heard of it and went out against them. Then the Philistines went and made a raid on the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of God, saying, "Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hand?" The Lord said to him, "Go up, for I will deliver them into your hand." So they went up to Baal Perazim, and David defeated them there. Then David said, "God has broken through my enemies by my hand like a breakthrough of water." Therefore, they called the name of that place Baal Perazim. And when they left their gods there, David gave a commandment, and they were burned with fire. Then the Philistines once again made a raid on the valley. Therefore, David inquired again of God, and God said to him, "You shall not go up after them. Circle around them and come upon them in front of the mulberry trees. And it shall be when you hear a sound of marching in the tops of the mulberry trees, then you shall go out to battle, for God has gone out before you to strike the camp of the Philistines." So David did as God commanded him, and they drove back the army of the Philistines from Gibeon as far as Gezer.
Yep, that's it. Great. Okay, so here's the game. What is different about this version versus the version in Samuel that we just read?
That they burned the idols.
Okay, so in Chronicles, sorry, in Samuel, they picked them up. And as far as we know, they took them home with them.
Yeah, mine says it implies that they took them home. It doesn't say pick them up.
Yeah.
There's more sense to it.
In Chronicles, it says not only, hey, we're going to burn those things. Those things are dirty. And anybody knows anything about Chronicles, well, you'll start to see some things. That's one point. David's going to be cleaned up a little bit in Chronicles.
They're cleaning up his picture of who he is.
Chronicles likes to clean David up. Not just David, his son as well. We'll see that too.
Davidic dynasty.
Can somebody give me the text about them not burning the islands and take the islands?
Well, the other text we just read in
Second Samuel 5.
Okay, I just didn't have it and I wanted to write it down.
You mean the specific verse?
Yes, I got it there.
It is verse
2 Samuel.
Let's see. 21. 2 Samuel 5:21.
Also, the place name needs to be cleaned up because Baal Perazim. You have a lot of places named after Baal. You know, the god of this town, the god of the, like, there's Baal and then your town name. So, Baal Perazim is the name of this place. You need to.
But it's not different, huh?
No, but what I'm saying is it needs to be rebaptized and given a new name.
Yeah.
And is it giving a new name?
No, yeah, it's playing with the name Perazim because a Peretz is to break out, right?
Yeah.
So before, if everyone knows it as Baal Perazim, they're explaining it's because God broke out.
Right.
So not Baal. This is the story of God doing it.
I mean, Baal is both the name of gods, but it also just means Lord, doesn't it?
Well, it means owner.
But Sharon, it's not different though.
No, it's
so
not different.
I'm looking for differences right now.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's different. It's the same place name. I'm just saying that in both places they're renaming it or
it's
giving
just
it fresh meaning that is connected to God
now.
God is displacing Baal in this place.
Specifically the Lord.
Yeah, the Lord is displacing Baal.
Yeah, you'd hate Baal here. Okay, what else is different between the two?
Two extra boys.
13 sons, right? There was 11 in Samuel's version. Here in Chronicles, he has 13.
So the average is a nice 12.
There you go.
The names are very similar.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I already mentioned about they go from Geba.
And there's a
in
Gibeon.
Samuel,
there.
And in Chronicles, it's Gibeon, so it's two different places.
Well, that's more like, because didn't you say that it should be around Gibeon, it's just north of here.
Right. So is Geba, but
Geba. Gibeon is further north than Geba.
Yeah.
Gibeon HaKadoshah, yeah, it's on the way to.
Right, it's north. Yeah. Geba is like Pisgat's Ev.
So if you're gonna if you're gonna turn down to Gezer, it to me it makes more sense that you'd be going to Geba and then turning down
Where's
to Gezer.
Gezer?
Gezer's where we were yesterday.
Right.
So if you're driving down Highway 1 towards Tel Aviv, after you pass Latrun, off on your left-hand side, that's Gezer.
Okay, but here's going back to this. When the Philistines come, what's David's first reaction? Versus what does Chronicles have and what does Samuel have? What does your memory say? Or?
David said, "And God's of God, shall I go and attack them?"
No, that's not the first thing he did.
He went out against them first.
Okay, Chronicles says he marches out to them. Then he asks God. And Samuel, what's the first thing that he does?
Asks God.
No. He goes and hides in the fortress. Second Samuel 5:17. When the Philistines heard that David had been designated king over Israel, or anointed, they all went up to search for David. And when David heard about it, he went down to the fortress. It could just be read as, you know, what's our leader going to the fortress for? He should go out to battle.
That's not the story of Adullam and all that, is it? When
he, no.
That's a different story, when he really does run away.
Yeah.
Give me the reference again in 2 Samuel.
2 Samuel 5:17.
He went to get weapons?
Right, I mean, you can interpret it however.
He's hiding.
It just doesn't have, you know, it's Chronicles is just making it a little more, give him a little more oomph.
I'm going the other way.
That's right. That's right.
I didn't hear what Danny said.
It doesn't have him going the other way in the face of.
Right. It cleans him up. I mean, that's what you're saying all along.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot more to this, but no one's pointed out the whole point of our Bible study today, which is about the women in the Bible who are kind of like the skeletons in the closet of the Bible. Otherwise known as concubines. What are concubines?
That's a good question.
They generate children.
They generate children.
There's are kind of free? Wife that's are not
they,
really a
are
wife.
Are they free?
No.
They're slaves. Okay?
Yeah.
And then they're not technically wives, even though they have some, their children obviously are half of the husband who has the power.
They don't get the standing of real wife.
And they have no inheritance rights.
Right, like, you know the story of Abimelech of Judges? Remember, he kills his 70 brothers.
He's
the son of Gideon, but his mom's a concubine.
Okay.
And so that's why he kills his 70 brothers, or 69, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. So it's a stigma, but it's a reality. And so, going back to our Chronicles text versus our Samuel text, what's the very first verse say? How are they different? David went to Jerusalem and took what?
More wives.
Pilakshim v'nashim.
Samuel says he took concubines, and Chronicles does not mention the concubines.
Well, it says concubines and wives.
No, I know that. There's no mention of the concubines in Chronicles. Again,
right.
Chronicles is
cleaning it up.
Trying, you know, right, because wives are more legitimate. Another example of Chronicles and Samuel. We all know Solomon. Solomon had how many wives?
Good question.
300
wives and 700 concubines?
No, 700 wives and 300 concubines.
Oh.
That's in 1 Kings.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's flipped
wives.
The other way. Sorry, my computer just went on a blink.
Yeah. What was he thinking?
Sure, it's not that. You think it's that?
It is 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3. 700 wives, 300 concubines. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3. We all know Solomon's problems, right? He has a lot of wives. He makes a lot of horses. He brings in all these idols and gods that come with the wives.
He's basically too political.
Yeah.
He lets, because the wives represent marriage treaties in many cases.
Yeah.
And he lets them do their own thing, have their own religion. So he's too open to everybody else's religions coming in.
Right.
He just lets them keep being the way they were.
Yeah. And what does Chronicles say about Solomon's wives and concubines?
They pulled Solomon's heart away from the
Lord. Sorry, the Book of Chronicles. What does the Book of Chronicles say about Solomon's wives and concubines? It says absolutely nothing. Doesn't mention them. You can go to...
They're in the closet.
1 Chronicles...
Skeletons.
Sorry, 2nd... I think, 2nd Chronicles chapter 9. Read that. We don't have time to do it now, but you can go and read it. 2nd Chronicles chapter 9, 2nd Chronicles chapter 10. It goes from Solomon into Rehoboam. And compare that with 1 Kings chapter 10, 1 Kings chapter 11. And it's, you just kind of skip over it, the compiler of Chronicles. So this morning, it's very interesting how, again, Abraham had concubines. Anybody who came in late, I was surprised by that. I didn't remember him having concubines. And I just remembered Sarah, Hagar, Keturah. And I remember Keturah being a wife. But 1 Chronicles 1:32 says Keturah was a concubine. The concubine was a very common thing in that part of the world, or that time of the world. It's mentioned, I'll just run the list off here. Abraham's brother Nahor had a concubine. That's in Genesis chapter 22. Jacob, Bilhah, the maid of, is it Rachel?
Rachel.
Yeah.
Rachel is called a concubine in Genesis 35. Esau's son has a concubine. Gideon's wife is a concubine who gives birth to Abimelech, who I just mentioned.
There's a Pilegesh Bagiv'ah that
the dies. Most famous concubine is Judges chapter 19 to verse chapter 20, right? Everyone knows about that concubine who gets chopped into pieces. Saul had a concubine named Rizpah. How many concubines did David have in Jerusalem that he left when he fled the city? He left 10 concubines there.
Mm-hmm.
And then his son
Absalom
sleeps with the 10 concubines on the roof. You remember that? To show people that he's the king, he's the man at that point. Solomon had 300 concubines. Rehoboam, this is the son of Solomon, has 60 concubines. So it's a very common thing. And it's just very different from our world today.
Have you explored where the word in English comes from?
Concubine?
Yeah.
No.
Because what in the world, you know?
Because pilegish also sounds foreign.
Well, what's a concubine?
Yeah.
It's a farm machine.
I think it sounds like some Akkadian word, like pilagshu or something.
What's a combine?
I don't know. Combine. Do you know where it's from, Uncle?
It's going to be Sumerian or Hurrian or something else.
Before Akkadian, you're saying?
Yeah, well, look at the root. It's got four.
Four, right.
It's got four that don't fit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got four that don't fit and aren't part of a building. It's not like a T or a sheen that's in front
right,
of
right,
it
right,
to
right.
build a new word. It's a, you don't build words in Semitic languages with a P.
Right.
So it looks like a
Sumerian.
A substratum word. Hurrian, Sumerian, those are our two favorite substrata, but
or some other such thing as
well. There were tons of little languages around in the area.
Do you know where the word concubine came from?
It comes from Latin
Latin.
To lie down, cubare.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because there's the con with a sleeping partner, basically.
I've got one of those.
No, you have a wife. Come on, I'm legitimate.
One.
She woke me up today. It's all I know. Here I am.
So when Chronicles cleans up these stories, I mean, what can we take spiritually from that?
So this is my point for this morning, if I had to summarize this, because this isn't something that it's complicated, that there were concubines, and they're not, you can see that Chronicles and Kings, or Samuel, the writer of Samuel and Kings versus the writer of Chronicles. Chronicles is much later, it comes at a later time period, but they are wrestling with it. These different things, just like we today, like if we have people who are spiritual leaders in the church or people we look up to, they have complicated, you want to say, sinful lives.
They have issues.
They have issues, yeah. Moral failures. People have all these
euphemisms. You can focus on different sides of them.
Yeah, you can focus on it. So on one hand, it's refreshing to see that the Bible is not hiding stuff. And you can also see that the Bible is a dialogue going on within itself, where it's having to interpret itself. And it also shows you that God is still speaking today to us, and we're growing, we're developing. For instance, you know, we don't think slavery is a right, period. And slavery is throughout the entire Bible, because that was the world the Bible was in back then. So same thing with concubines. We believe.
You don't call them concubines anymore. You call them lovers or
sleeping partners.
Sure, partners, but we don't think it's a good thing.
It depends who you are.
Yeah, no, it does depend who they are. But like society at large does not.
No. A concubine, though, is more than a lover. A concubine is someone who's going to have children for you.
Right.
It's a slave lover.
Yeah. They don't have a choice. They have no choice.
Yeah, they can't leave. They don't have real economic standing. They couldn't go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, they should be provided for within that infrastructure.
They were provided for.
So in a sense, that maybe for a poor woman, that, you know, to be a concubine of a king, it's not such a bad thing. She's going to have
sure, you get provided for.
And she'll have the children she wants.
But they don't have
they don't may have inherit,
of,
but yeah. He sends them off with gifts and whatever. They don't do too badly.
Right.
That's what I mean. Like some of them that was maybe even a better thing than what they would have.
Right.
And it shows again that Abraham is very generous.
Margaret, you want to say
something? Like this point, the bigger truth is that the believer has had to re-examine the place of women alongside men.
Right.
This is huge. This is a
huge, huge, huge. I agree.
Evangelical Christians, some of them won't let a woman be up in the pulpit, and they'll send a woman as a missionary way across the far lands
to die from malaria.
She'll come back and get reports, but they can't preach.
Right.
What is going on?
We learn to share, dear. It's very good.
So with that, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.